Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is a startup entrepreneur living in a sleepy, rural Ontario town, which is something that I can very much relate to. His flagship product, Wishlist Member, now powers over 52,000 online membership sites worldwide. Together with his wife, he has also launched a registered Canadian charity called World Teacher Aid. And in less than a year, their charity began building schools and funding monthly school feeding programs in countries like Ghana, Kenya, and Uganda. Now, let's hack Stu McLaren. Thank you so much, Stu, for coming on.
My pleasure. I'm excited to be here with you, John.
Very cool. So let's just jump right into it, shall we, Stu? As an entrepreneur, Stu, can you tell me what specifically you do that you think other people don't that has been the biggest contributor so far to your successes?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things that I learned early on, and this was from an experience at university, was just the value of ideas. There's a lot of people that say, you know, worthless until they're actually put into action. And I agree with that to a certain extent. But one of the things that I realized was that it's important to continuously fill your brain and your mind with good ideas from a wide variety of different industries. So I would say the one thing that I do really well is I have learned to curate good ideas. And I consider myself almost like a person who's constantly putting puzzles together. And so when I face a challenge, I'm trying to pull from all the good ideas that I have come across in my time and try to find the ones that I can use in the right place at the right time to be able to move forward and get beyond those challenges. So I'm really, really good at particularly like big vision strategy, because I'm able to pull a lot of ideas and concepts together to be able to formulate one coherent strategy. And so that's really, I would say, the one thing that I do well is curate good ideas.
So do you look for ideas, like just not necessarily business ideas, but kind of pull ideas from all different aspects of life that you can maybe bring
Absolutely.
Back into business?
You know, I'm constantly taking photos, and I'm constantly, you know, taking screenshots of different things that I see that I like. And that's definitely business ideas, but that's also like colors, design concepts, fonts, all kinds of things like that, or even just experiences. You know, we can learn a lot. Like, here's a good example. The other day, my family was on a bit of a road trip. So we stopped off to grab something to eat. And as typically in these, environments, you have a tray with, you know, your food on the tray. And then when you're done, you go and you take your tray over to the garbage and you dump the garbage in. And here's one of the things that kind of stood out for me. I have this tray full of garbage, but there's no easy way to be able to dump the garbage in. You got to kind of like, you know, push the lid of the garbage open, you know, because I have both hands, you know, balancing these trays with full of garbage. I'm trying to push the garbage lid open, and the lid is like knocking the garbage off onto the ground. It was just a nightmare. And I sat there and I thought to myself, like, how easy would it have been for the person who created this garbage bin just to have a big open lid that I could just dump the garbage in and then put the tray down, and I wouldn't have to try to juggle, you know, or get somebody to pull the garbage lid open. So that's a good example. Like, that's just a user experience situation with a garbage can. And so one of the things that I learned from those types of situations is that we always want to make things as easy as possible for people to, you know, consume our products, to be able to use our products, et cetera. That little situation with the garbage can was a nightmare. You know, I had both hands were full, garbage was falling all over the place, and it shouldn't be that difficult to throw stuff out. So that's the type of thing that, you know, an experience that I had that I, you know, kind of put that into the old noggin and use that moving forward. And it just teaches lessons of, you know, you always want to make things easy for your customers and so forth. And that's just from, you know, going to a simple restaurant.
Can you tell me about when or how you realized you were an entrepreneur?
For me, I In hindsight, now looking back, there were early signs for sure. I was, but I think the biggest lesson, the moment in time when I look back, when I knew that I was going to end up going down this path, was when I was around 12 years old. And my parents both were extremely hardworking people. They still are today. You know, my dad for the longest time, he worked two full-time jobs. My mom worked two full-time jobs. They just worked really, really hard. And then on top of that, they were always there for my sister and I at every soccer game, basketball game, track meet, you name it. They were always there. So the result of that meant that they never had time for themselves. They were either always working or they were always, you know, essentially providing for my sister and I, which I'm so grateful for. But I never saw them really enjoying themselves. And so I remember vividly my dad was building a deck for our house because we were trying to save money. And so he's a very handy guy. So he would do everything himself. And he said, "Son, why don't you come with me and let me teach you, you know, some real world skills." And I remember looking at him and I said, "You know, Dad, I would love to learn this, but I have zero interest in learning how to do any of this stuff." And he tells the story to others when at that point I said to him, "You know, Dad, when I get older, I'm not going to need to know how to do this stuff because I'm going to make as much money as I can so that I can pay somebody to do it." And so this was, you know, when I was 12. So that was an early sign. Then I went to university and for business, and all my, you know, friends and colleagues and so forth, they were all graduating. We're all heading into the corporate world. I signed on the dotted line to, you know, go into a corporate job. But there was just something at a visceral level that just my stomach was flipping inside. And it felt like a trap. And I made the decision, I resigned before I started, that I would figure it out on my own because it just didn't feel right. I'm not a shirt and tie kind of a guy. I felt like a square peg in a round hole going into corporate Canada. And so from that point forward, ever since I graduated, I was blazing my own trail, if you will, and trying to figure it out.
So your parents weren't entrepreneurs at all then? They worked jobs?
They did work jobs, but my they were entrepreneurial in some respects. Like my dad had his own side businesses. They just worked really, really hard. So they were hard workers, and they were always trading time for money. And so whether it was in a job or whether it was with a side business, they were always trading time for money, and there was just no leverage there. And that was the big aha for me, was that there are other ways to be able to do this as an entrepreneur that do provide leverage, that don't require more of your time. And that's really what I sought after once I ventured out on my own.
Nice. So have you ever had to build your own deck now and wish that you would have listened to the lessons?
No. The thing was, we ended up paying my dad.
So it worked.
Yeah, no, there's nobody I would trust more than my dad to do the job right. So we ended up paying him to come help us with it.
You've now, at this point, with Wishlist Member, your WordPress plugin for membership sites, and now Rhino Support, you've sold millions of dollars of products on the internet. Can you tell us the story of your first sale on the internet?
Yeah, it's not as you know, glamorous as the $1 million and stuff like that. But when I was starting, you know, to rewind a little bit, I started my career as a speaker, professional, and I was talking on the subject of creativity. Because when I was in my first year of university, I failed out of my first year, talked my way back in, barely scraped by second year. Third year, everything changed for me because of a video of a guy named Doug Hall, who has a company called Eureka Ranch. And what they do is they come up with new product ideas for Fortune 500 companies, companies like Disney, Ford, FedEx, huge companies. And the video that I saw was of Doug Hall in a Hawaiian shirt, shorts, no shoes or socks, and he was shooting Nerf guns at corporate CEOs. And that was the first moment in school where I just totally lit up and was like, man, that's the kind of job that I want to have, or that's the kind of career I want to have. And so I learned everything I could about creativity from Doug's books, and I eventually went down and met Doug, and it was just an amazing experience. But what happened was it totally turned my schooling career around, because I started applying these creative thinking ideas to my schoolwork. And so I went from, you know, failing out of my first year to graduating top of my class, named most outstanding male by the end time I graduated university. And so I was passionate about the subject of creativity, and that's what I wanted to teach other students. So I started my career as a professional speaker, and it didn't take me long to realize that schools could only afford so much. I could only speak so many times a year, multiply the two together, and that was like my maximum earning potential. And I didn't like that. And so I wanted to figure out how to earn more by doing the same thing. And that's what led me to learning a lot about information marketing, packaging our knowledge and selling it to people who want to be able to learn what it is that we know. And so I started by just experimenting with the idea of selling information online. And my brother-in-law and I, we were working for a person who put on seminars every single month. And at these seminars were people who had built these high leverage online businesses. And I was just really eager to learn. And so finally I bit the bullet and I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to follow what they teach and I'm going to make it happen. So I put together this little ebook called Ideas for Halloween. And it was just an experiment just to see what would happen. And so I love Halloween. And so I brainstormed a whole bunch of ideas for things like Halloween parties and costumes and all this kind of stuff. I hired a ghostwriter to help me flesh it out. And so I spent about $600 on the ghostwriter. And then I hired a designer to help me make it all look nice. And then I worked tirelessly, like figuring out how to put a website together and the autoresponders and how to hook it up to a shopping cart. And I mean, this was back in 2004 when the tools were a lot more difficult to use. And so anyway, long story short, I got it all figured out. Then one of the things I remembered these trainers teaching was the power of AdWords. You know, you need to advertise your product in order to get people to your site, in order to buy your product. So I naively just started advertising. And every day my brother-in-law would come in and he would ask, you know, have you made a sale yet? And I would say, you know, no, I haven't made a sale yet, but it's a numbers game. You know, I just need a little bit of time. Like, it's just a numbers game. So I just kept spending more on Google Ads. And every day he'd come in, have you made a sale yet? No. Have you made a sale yet? No. Have you made a sale yet? No. Well, it didn't take long before, you know, he was just like, why are you doing this? Like, you know, it doesn't, it's not working. You're spending this money and it's just not working. And I'm like, it's going to happen. It's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. Well, long story short, I flew to a conference, and as soon as I landed, I got to the hotel and I ran up to the room and I, you know, hooked up to the internet to see if I miraculously had made like all these sales while I was in the air. But lo and behold, when I checked the stats, there was my first sale, $7.95. And John, I will never forget that moment. I was like jumping up and down, dancing. I was high-fiving my girlfriend, now wife. We were just celebrating. It was like the most memorable moment in my business career. And I said to her, I'm like, this is it. You know, this is now that I've proven that this can work. Now it's just a tweaking process. Well, John, behind the scenes, I had spent over $900 on ads to make a $7.95 sale. When you factor in all the money I'd spent on creating the product, it really was not a profitable venture whatsoever. But I just kept telling myself, I'm like, listen, somebody out there in the ether had bought my product online, and now I just need to figure the process out and tweak it. So here's what happened though, John. That instilled a belief in me that I could do this. And that belief is more powerful than anything anybody could ever teach me or give me. You know, and from that point forward, I did. I started just, you know, one step from the other. And because I had the experience of, you know, going through trying to figure everything out and piecing it all together and selling it online, I just started to build momentum. And, you know, today, fast forward, as you said, we've sold millions and millions of dollars of products and software and consulting services and so forth. But it all started with that first sale. But the crazy thing was, at my wedding, my brother-in-law was retelling this story to everybody in the audience. And he was telling everybody how every day he would come in and he would ask if I had made a sale. And I would say, no, I haven't made a sale. And he said, have you made a sale? No. Have you made a sale? No. And he said, after a while, he just got so depressed seeing me put all this work into creating the product and trying to sell it and buying these ads. And every day he would come in and ask if I had made a sale. And he said, so finally, when I left to go on that trip, he asked his girlfriend, who I had never met, if she could just buy the damn product. And I will never forget that moment at the wedding. And I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it, because I looked at him and tears just started streaming down my face, because, you know, it seemed like an innocent act to him, you know, and it was a nice thing to do, but realizes what has transpired in my career as a result of that $7.95 sale. You know, my whole business is built on the back of that belief that I could do it and that I could make a sale to a total stranger online. Now, to find out afterwards, it was totally fabricated. You know, I get mixed emotions about it, but man, it just shows the power of belief and it shows the power of that first sale. And I think that's important for every entrepreneur, regardless of what you're selling and what market you're in.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I heard that you told that story, I believe it was like 3 years ago at a conference, and I didn't know anything about you at the time. Well, I had used Wishlist and I knew you as that. I thought you were going to talk membership sites, and that story was, yeah, it's still, I had made my first sale at that point, so I totally knew, but. And now how you say that first $7.95 to like kind of created your whole business. But I honestly think that you've probably started so many other people's businesses just with that story, because it's so true. That first sale is amazing, isn't it? And
it is. And I think as entrepreneurs, when we're starting out, we get lured in by the idea and of making, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars with our own business. But reality is, too often we lose sight of the fact that it starts with that very first sale. And when you're starting, you've just got to focus on that first sale, that first customer. And then it's a process of building and tweaking and growing from that point forward. You know, yeah, we definitely want to get to the, you know, making millions of dollars. That's the end goal. But the reality is you have to start with where it all begins, and that is with that first sale. And that definitely was a huge lesson for me in my entrepreneurial career, even today, you know, to realize that, yeah, we have, you know, hundreds of people buying our products every day, but they're all individuals, they're all people, and it makes a big difference when you start putting things in perspective like that.
Exactly. And I think that's a terrible thing for a business or an entrepreneur to lose that vision. Just because you maybe sell 100 products or one product a day, it's still to probably 100 individual people. They all still have the same fears, the same desires, and your business should be helping them with those, either providing a service or a product that's going to alleviate some sort of fear or desire in them. And
yeah, and we live in the greatest time ever for doing business. Like I am so grateful that I was able to start and run a business in today's day and age, because, you know, you go back a generation before, you look at a guy like my dad was entrepreneurial. You know, he did have his own businesses, side businesses, but there was no way that he'd be able to have the kind of leverage that we have, or the kind of opportunity that we have today to reach as many people as we can thanks to the internet. And so, I mean, I today am so grateful because we live in the best time ever for being an entrepreneur. Like, hands down, this is the best time ever. We have more opportunity, more ability to reach people, and there's so many ideas that, you know, we can start applying to our businesses to continually add leverage and to help them grow that were never available before. It's a super exciting time as an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. I fully believe you. And there's hardly a day goes by that I don't say to myself or to my wife, like, I honestly, if I was born 20 years ago, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do for a living. I don't know how, like, just the fact that how we can sell products online and have teams around the world. It's just, it's amazing. I couldn't imagine having to just go out and I don't know what kind of job I would even get at this point. I don't know how I could do it.
I'm sitting here in my shorts and t-shirt, which is exactly what I love to be in as much as possible. That wouldn't have been possible, you know, 20 years ago. I would have been in a suit and tie, and I would have been grumpy and angry, and it just wouldn't have been a happy life. I mean, we just have an amazing time to be able to design the business and ultimately the life that we really want to lead. And I can't say enough about how awesome it is to be an entrepreneur today.
Exactly. So to do this it's true. Now is the time better than more so than any other time in history, I think. And we don't know where it's going to be. I honestly feel in 10 years, if you haven't started, maybe it won't be as like fruitful as it is right now. But there is a lot of work involved. So let's just talk work, because following you on social media, you are absolutely a family man. You are all over. You're at the beach. You're in Africa building schools. You're with your daughter. You know, you're jogging. But at some point, you're also working, and I don't get to see that. So, like, do you work a standard work schedule at this point, or how do you work at this point?
Yeah, my standard work day is typically, like, I'll wake up. I try to get up before, actually, my wife and daughter. So, you know, my daughter is 3.5, so it can be sometimes tricky because, you know, sometimes she'll wake up a little bit earlier or later, but I'm always in a bit of with her where it's 30, and I try at that point either to do some reading, or I go for a run or whatever it may be, and I try to get back if I'm running before she wakes up. So yesterday was a perfect day. I woke up a little after 6, put on my running gear, went out and ran for an hour, came back, and Marla, which is my daughter and my wife, were still sleeping, which was amazing. And then about after I finish stretching, about 15 minutes later, Marla comes out and we have breakfast together, and while my wife still sleeps. And then around 8:30 is usually when I kind of, you know, shift gears a little bit and I start getting ready for work. And then I go to, and now I go to an office. So my wife and I bought another home, and that's what we use for our office, because I was working from the home and I love working from home, loved it. The challenge that I had as Marla started to get older was my heart wanted to be with her all day and my head was like, dude, you got to get to work. So I was always in this constant state of conflict and friction. So my wife was the one that suggested, she's like, listen, you got to get an outside office so that you can just focus when you're at work. And so my day from a work perspective typically starts around 8:39, and I'm at the office, and then I work until 4, and 4 is a hard deadline for me. So between those hours, I'm, you know, working, but I do have flexibility with that. So yesterday was a beautiful day, and so my wife and I went paddleboarding, you know, for a couple hours in the morning. I like having the flexibility to be able to do that kind of stuff, but for the most part, nose to the grindstone between 9 and 4. And then after that, I completely shut off. That's my time again when I want to be present for Amy, who is my wife, and my daughter Marla, because that's their time. So 9 to 4 is typically a work day for me.
Wow. So you leave the house now. That's interesting, because I still work from the house.
So I leave the house, and we have an outside office. Some days I'll run to the office, John. So if I don't get the run in before Marla wakes up, I'll have breakfast with her. And then I have like a running backpack and I run to the office here, and then I'll shower and start the workday that way. So I'm always trying to get some exercise in before the day begins. But yeah, the office is outside of the home.
Yeah, I guess running would be a habit that it seems like you have like got to adopt into your life. Is there a habit that you were trying to develop, but you've struggled to adopt into your life?
Definitely. That's consistency with creating content. So I'm an idea guy. I have lots of ideas. I actually enjoy writing, but I just never find the discipline to sit down and do it on a consistent basis. So yesterday I had a great conversation with a friend of mine. His name is James Clear. And James and I were catching up and we were chatting about a bunch of things, and we were talking about his business, and his business has really started to take off because he's gotten consistent with creating content. And he said, you know, before it was very sporadic, you know, for him. He would create it when inspiration hit. And he was talking to a writing mentor of his, and he said, yeah, the writing mentor said, I'm the same way. I write when inspiration hits. It just happens to be every Monday and Thursday. And so James said, you know, professionals do things on a schedule. Amateurs do things when they feel like it. And so when he said that, it hit me like a ton of bricks, because when it comes to me creating content, I've very much been an amateur at that, where I create it when inspiration hits. I create it when I feel like it, but I haven't been disciplined to say, okay, every Monday and every Thursday, I'm going to produce a blog post. And so that's something that I'm definitely working on, and I'm trying to figure out how to hack my own habits in order to make that happen.
One of our biggest fears I see as entrepreneurs and as humans is being wrong and not knowing the answer to something. So whether this is like a new product you're going to launch or something, just a new idea you want to implement into your business, I feel like we have to learn how to and overcome the fear of being wrong. Can you walk us through, in your experience, how to be wrong?
Man, I still struggle with this today, John. Like, I was talking to another entrepreneur friend of mine, and we were talking about how, you know, success itself can actually be very dangerous. You know, so I look at Wishlist Member, which is our software, and I'm humbled and still flabbergasted that it now powers over 50,000 plus online sites and communities and so forth. It's just phenomenal. I've never imagined that happening. But the result of that is that, you know, we've built a great business. And, you know, that's what there's a reputation that we have for success and, you know, building a great business. But I will tell you that that's definitely limited me, because there are a lot of other ideas that I have that I've just been gun shy on pulling the trigger on, because what if they fail, you know? And on a psychological level, I'm realizing that I'm holding back because I'm afraid of, if it fails, will people think of me differently? Will people view me as a failure, or they won't view me as the success that Wishlist has created, because now my most recent one was a flop? So I struggle with this all the time. And in that conversation, we were, both of us are entrepreneurs who both had, you know, successful businesses. And we were both saying the exact same thing. You know, like, you reach a plateau of a certain level of success, but getting to that next milestone, it's a whole gamble and a risk, primarily because of the potential that it could fail and all the psychological drama that comes with that as an entrepreneur. So everybody deals with this at some level. I definitely deal with it. You know, there's a lot of ideas that I want to go for, but I feel myself hesitating on because of that whole fear of failure, for sure. So it's a reality. I think no matter who you are, you're going to face it at some level.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to hear that you have to, like, you have to deal with it from a different perspective because you had such a big success with you already that now it's not even like you're just starting. It's like, well, what if my first project fails? It's like, well, even if Wishlist wasn't your first project, it's a huge success. It is. And it's continuing on for years. It's amazing to see.
I think when you're starting, it's the best time to fail. I mean, there's no expectation that you're going to succeed. And so you could just, you know, you can just try stuff. I mean, look at my first sale project, you know, like the ideas for Halloween, you know, made $7.95. I'd spent over $900 on ads, over $1,000 total on producing the product. So I was way in the hole. Like it was, you know, the worst profitability project that you could even think of. But I learned a lot in that process. So when you're starting, I think it's the best time to just blaze forward because there's zero expectation that you'll succeed. There's no pressure. You know, nobody is thinking that you'll succeed at anything. There's no expectation. There's much less risk. And so it's a great time to try different things and experiment and just find what works.
Yeah, I mean, people are almost expecting you to fail with your first projects. Like, I mean, when I went into my first projects, I was kind of in the back of my head like, okay, well, you have to have failures before you have success. So it's true. That's absolutely true.
I was just going to say, I think it's a fun thing. You know, like when people don't expect you to succeed, I mean, that's when you can have the most fun because there's very few pressures, there's very few demands, and as you said, people are expecting you to fail, so you know you're going to over deliver if you have any element of success. So it's kind of fun that way.
Exactly. So this, Stu, has been a lot of fun. I really, really, really appreciate you coming on and sharing such personal stories. It's been awesome. Can you just let the listeners know where they can find out more about you?
The best place to find any info about me is at stu.me, so stu.me. And from there, you'll find links for Wishlist Member, Rhino Support, and everything else that I'm involved with, like our charity.
Thank you so much, dude. This was really, really a lot of fun. And maybe we'll have you back someday.
Awesome. Sounds good. Look forward to it. Thanks, John.
Such a friendly, likable, just down-to-earth guy that runs an amazing, awesome business. And now him and his wife have started this charity and they're changing people's lives over in Africa. And it's just awesome. I'm really, really happy with that conversation. And did you get the hack? Did you hear the hack? When he said it, I literally got goosebumps because it's something that's really resonated with me for a long time. And I've told people the same thing in a different way, but I think it's truly, truly meaningful for everyone to hear. So let's just back up a little bit because here's the hack.
Somebody out there in the ether had bought my product online and now I just need to figure the process out and tweak it. So here's what happened though, John. That instilled a belief in me that I could do this. And that belief is more powerful than anything anybody could ever teach me or give me.
And that's the hack. And that is so absolutely true. And I'm so happy that Stu just said that because it really is. It's that first sale where you realize that somebody has given money from their bank account to yours and they're just somewhere out there on the internet. And when you just need to learn to scale that up. And then I also agree when he says, when you get into millions of dollars in sales, it's all you're literally doing is just scaling it from that first person to tens or hundreds of thousands of people. And if you can think of it in that way, it's really not any more complicated than that. It's simple, but it's not easy. So that was another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm so happy that you have taken the time again to spend it here with me and with Stu because I've had a lot of fun. Again, check out the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. I will have links to Stu, all of Stu's stuff and his products and also to his charity that him and his wife are running. I think everybody should check it out. Until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.